Welcome to the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. Each week we sit around and discuss the music from our past. Sometimes we agree.
I call it iconic. It's a 10. That riff is it's incredible.
Clearly a 10. This is one of the most iconic songs of the 80s.
Iconic from start to finish.
And sometimes we disagree.
The song sounds like something you might hear at your aunt's funeral.
The absolute worst lyrics ever.
With the juvenile flush on that one, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that crap.
Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, guys, we are back with another Audible Ecstasy podcast, and this week we are visiting the legendary Rod Stewart with his album Every Picture Tells a Story. This is a classic one. This is from back in 1971. You boys ready to rock this thing out?
I am. Anthony, let's hear your tagline this week. I'm sure you got a good one there.
Not really. I mean, we could be pretty profane if you want to do that.
Oh, Lord.
No.
Break out the explicit tag.
Now, I was going to say, got arrested for inciting a peaceful riot. It's the Audible Ecstasy podcast.
That's a good one.
I believe I'm the only one on this group that served time. Thank you.
Or my body stunk, but I kept my funk. There's a line in that one of those songs, too.
Oh, God. That's a good one. That's a classic. All right. That's great. All right, guys. So let's get this thing started. We're going to go to track number one. It's called Every Picture Tells a Story. Hit it, Chris. I moved right out of here, yeah. Listen, on the Peking Ferry, I was feeling merry. Sailing on my way back here, I fell in love with a slit-eyed lady.
Keep a PC, Rod.
All right, guys. So Every Picture Tells a Story. I said, this is how I wrote it out. I wrote, nice rocking tune to start the album out, in a sense. Not really an electric tune, but certainly an amplified acoustic adventure, if you will. I think it makes the listener, depending on someone like myself, not super familiar with his earlier work, I wasn't sure what was going to happen on this record. So this right here lets me think we're going to enjoy a little acoustic rock album, so to speak. And the song, it has that hint of soul that he really has later on in this album more so. I think the song is great overall. I think it's a great way to open the album as well. I'm giving this one a 7. After multiple listens, I think it's a great tune. Chris, what do you think about Every Picture Tells a Story?
I think it's a solid opener for sure. Definitely gets the toe tap and the head bobbing. Yeah. Anything like to say.
I think I say that song in one of my notes today.
Slightly racist way to open the album, but you know, it's I was thinking about this. 71, this is an old album. None of us were even alive when this thing came out. Right around Vietnam, there was probably a lot of anti-Asian sentiment. Although he's Australian, right? So maybe
I think he's English, isn't he?
For some reason, I thought he was Australian. Yeah, regardless. This was a single, so this song was playing on the radio, these lyrics were. So that kind of surprised me a little bit.
Let's tell you about that Rush song that makes that little da-da-da-da-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, but I didn't really want to say that. Y'all heard it. You know what he says. it's pretty racist. It definitely was. That said, I'm giving it an 8. I think it's an excellent way to start the album. So,
right on. Anthony, what do you think about Every Picture Tells a Story?
Songfacts.com. In the May 1995 issue of Mojo, Stewart said of the song, I can remember the buildup. you know what the song's about. Your early teenage life, when you're leaving home and you're exploring the world for yourself. Ronnie Wood and I rehearsed around my house at Muswell Hill and recorded it the next day. That whole album was done in 10 days, 2 weeks, about as long as it takes to get a drum sound right nowadays. And the song's title doesn't appear in the lyrics until the end, where it is repeated a whopping 24 times. The female vocalist is Maggie Bell, a Scottish firebrand who was in a group called Stone the Crows. Also on backup vocals is Long John Baldry, who gave Stewart a big break when he brought him into his band in 1964. So, a lot of cool
stuff. Ron Wood from Rolling Stones fame?
I think so.
No kidding. Get the hell out of here. I had no idea. I saw the name. I was like, there's no way it's the same guy.
I think it is. I didn't research that further, but I think Stewart was in the Faces at the time of this band when it came out too. And so,
okay. Okay. You know,
I think they were all.
That's kind of cool.
Was Ron Wood in the Faces? You don't know that?
I'll have to look it up.
Google it.
I don't know.
In a minute to see.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I think it's the Ron Wood, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so. By God, he was a face. He's a member of the Faces and the Jeff Beck Group, as well as the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
Learned a little something new this morning, huh?
I did, yeah. When you said
I thought it was a awesome. Ron Wood, yeah.
Well, I'm not a huge Stones fan. I know he's like one of the most famous people in the world when it comes to rock music. So, hey, that's great. Or guitarist,
Stewart.
I mean. Not,
you know, Rod people. Stewart has got some cred, man. I tell you, get back into his old stuff. He really does have a lot of excellent rock music and excellent music. I think in his later days, he got to be more of a soft rock crooner and sort of kind of got maligned like that. But when you get his old music, man, he's got a lot of good tunes. So
right on, man.
Yeah, you know, I like the acoustic guitar that leads this song and album in. It's good stuff. You know, after that, we're treated to a raspy Rod Stewart classic rock jam with some great harmonies. It's a great way to lead an album in. Digging it. I gave an 8. I think it's an excellent tune. So
fair. Fair. All right. Let's move forward to track number 2. It's called Seems Like a Long Time. Chris, go ahead. Guys, so it seems like a long time is a little bit of a slowdown from our opening track. Excuse me. Predominantly bass driven and piano driven as well. And has that little bluesy guitar thrown in there. Seems to be a little bit of a tough listen from the opening song, in my opinion. And I think the song seems like it goes on just a little bit draggy. I don't know. And it's only a 4-minute song, but it seemed like it dragged a little bit. However, the guitar solo, fantastic. That blues taste, blues bass, I love it. Makes the song overall for me very good. And that's initially it was good. I bumped that up to a 6 there, or I guess late last week, and I thought, well, you know what? It's actually a very good, very nicely written song. It's just that it's not as good as a predecessor, and it's a good song. I just don't think it's much better than very good. So I'm at a 6. Chris, what do you think about
it? Seems like a long time when you listen to it.
Well, it's 4 minutes.
Chris is all right, you've had your time.
Oh, my bad. Sorry. Forgive
me. Let me get through this here. Yeah, that's my first note, Anthony. Seems like a long time before this is going to end. It's just slow and drones on and boring and way too long. I can't believe this is the second song on this album, honestly. This should have been buried in the back somewhere. It's a meh for me. It's not a good song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes on forever, and it's the same. It's repetitive as hell, and it's just, it's just not that good, man. Yep.
I don't know, man.
Good, Anthony.
You're okay.
What's a meh? Is it four?
It's four.
It's a four. It's meh. Yeah. Meh.
It's a meh. I'll give you that. I think I do. I will say that's the one negative on a couple songs on the album. They do seem like they go on for a little bit more longer than they need to go on for. Like they don't have as much chorus or something, or they don't have as much song to them. It doesn't hurt the song for me personally. I still really like this song, but what I wrote was it is my turn, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Anthony. Feel free. Go ahead, dude.
Chris totally flushed this one. Yeah, did that gong show thing where he did the gong.
I was holding my hand over the button. Anthony or Jimmy kept going rattling. I was like, all right, enough. Let's just get through.
Well,
this.
See, me and Jimmy were trying to have a good discussion, and you decided to go juvenile on us. So that's the problem
Okay. Hell yeah, it is the Alexis podcast. We do that.
You know, it's we were trying to have a podcast here and talk about the song, but you just wanted to go and do your song.
Apparently not this one, Anthony. Go ahead. Yeah.
Piano is a nice touch. I enjoy the slow jam of it. So I like the solid bass tones. You throw a little bass guitar in there, you know I'm going to be all over that. I think Rod's voice is perfect for a song like this. You know, when I listened to this song, I wrote this, that I can see Rod in a small bar, smoke rings in the air, sitting on a stool, crooning to a small crowd at hand. The blues guitar solo is a nice touch. It's an 8 for me. I think this is an excellent tune. I really do like this song. So, but
wow.
Fantastic. I've had probably a little bit longer to listen to this than you guys have because I really get
it. There might be 5 lyrics to this whole song. I don't know.
It feels doesn't like matter. I think it's an excellent tune.
It seems like a long time.
It's an excellent tune in my mind. I really like it. Sounds great.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, guys. Let's go to track number 3. It's called, it's like a dual track. It's called That's All Right and Amazing Grace. Hit it, Chris. All right, guys. So this one right here, Chris only captured the first half of this song. It's basically, obviously, it's two tunes. It's That's All Right, and then it's Amazing Grace. I broke this down into two separate reviews for both of these songs. Here we go. This would be my flush if this was my choosing for flushing on this album. And this is how I wrote it out. I said, That's All Right. This is the first part. Love the slide intro. This is absolutely a terrible cover. Never will top the version by Elvis. Elvis's version is the one that's in my heart and my head. And that's just how it's going to be. Chris, I realize you probably weren't familiar with that at all, but the Elvis version is the one I think of when I hear That's All Right. Although I know it's written by another fella named, was it Arthur Crudrup? I think his name was. He's the one who originally wrote the song.
It's a Bob Dylan song. So,
well, the person that wrote the song, so Bob may have taken it from Arthur. But yeah, it was written a long, long time ago.
Yeah, Bob Dylan wrote the next song. Do you think it's this one?
Too? Oh no, I'm sorry. My bad. I'm sorry. Sorry.
That's okay.
I'm having a morning. Having way, a senior moment is what I'm having.
I say that obviously never going to top that version by Elvis. I'm not a fan. I said this is borderline disgraceful. I gave this one a meh. I gave it a 4 because I didn't think it was a great version. I know y'all like. I look in my ears. I was expecting Elvis. I was expecting something different. I didn't expect it to be Elvis's version. You know what I'm saying? Then Amazing Grace. I do appreciate the guitar rendition on the slide guitar. And it's a really great job performing the tune, knowing now that it's probably Ron Wood playing it. It's pretty impressive. I said, Rod sounds like he does struggle on some notes, but I think that's his vocal style because he's got that raspy voice. Mm-hmm. I still think overall the cover of Amazing Grace is certainly good. But that's about it. So I gave the overall average of this song a 4.5 because of the 4 for That's All Right and 5 for The Amazing Grace. So on this one right here, it's my lowest score of the night. It's 4.5 overall. Chris, what do you think about That's All Right, Amazing Grace?
Well, okay, as far as my review goes, I completely ignored the fact that he tacked Amazing Grace on the end of this, so I'm not even going to, like, acknowledge that. I mean, it's there. It makes no sense. I really don't know why he did it. And I was actually, when I was writing this, I was like, it's two entirely different songs, and it really makes no sense why he mashed two together. So I'm just going to talk about That's All Right. I mean, Amazing Grace is a fine song on its own. Doesn't belong here, but that's what it is. As far as That's All Right, it's a straight up rocker. The toe tapping yet again. I like his vocals. It's very singable. Honestly, I think it's one of the better songs on the album. Personally, I think he really crushed it. I'm sure Elvis crushed it as well, but that doesn't mean he can't sing. It's not Elvis' song, by the way. It's Arthur Kudrup or whoever. So, like, I don't know how many did Elvis write many of his own songs, or did he have? I mean, he strikes me like more of an entertainer.
I think he wrote a bunch of songs. He also had collaborators, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I gave it a 9 because I think it may be one of the best songs on the album, personally. But it makes no sense to tack Amazing Grace onto it. I don't understand, really. But fair like enough. I say, I'm just going to ignore that fact for this review.
So you gave Amazing Grace a 0, so your overall is 4.5. Good job. Anthony, what do you think about That's All Right and Amazing Grace?
I think what threw me off a minute ago is the next one. Bob Dylan wrote the next song, and Elvis actually covered that song. That's what was throwing me off. Because I was reading ahead. My fault.
Right on. No, you're good, man. You're good. Don't worry.
But that was just funny. You mentioned Elvis. Like, what? No, I was like, wait, no, that's the next one. Anyways, That's All Right, Man. I think it's another solid tune, just like the first three. Gets the head bobbing and the feet tapping, like I always like to say. Easily singable chorus. What's not to like about it? I even like the odd transition to Amazing Grace. I mean, yeah, I like you guys. Like, why is it here? I honestly, when I was listening to this album a lot of times, I would just stream it. I didn't look at the song listing. And the first time I looked at the song listing, I was like, wait a minute, Amazing Grace isn't on this album. I thought that was like the next song after this one.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even realize that it was part of this song until I looked at the lyric, and I was like, what? I thought that was the next song.
Right.
So it's really weird. But man, I think, Rod sounds great on both of these songs. I think it's an excellent tune. I gave it an 8. I like everything about it. So I even like the odd transition at the end with Amazing Grace. But,
And I'll be honest with you guys. I tried. There's history with Elvis with my mom's side of the family. My grandfather was a huge, huge Elvis fan. I kind of grew up with the Elvis stuff when I was real little for Christmas. Like, it's always playing in the background for Christmas. So I knew That's All Right. And when I heard the exact same lyrics, I was like, God, he is butchering this song because I am the Elvis version in my mind. You know what I mean? So don't get me wrong. And like you two, I think the amazing, well, and like Chris, Amazing Grace, I think it sounded pretty good, to be honest with you.
Well, it sounded fine. I didn't dislike it, but it just doesn't belong there. It just makes no sense.
I get it.
Yeah. And honestly, you should just separate, make it to the next song or something.
Make it another song, and I don't know. I'm not even sure what I'd give it. He did a fine job with it.
This could be one of those situations where back in the 70s, you only had so much space to put out a record, so much space to put out a tape. Maybe he had to mash. He wanted to do Amazing Grace, but he couldn't get it to fit because of the limited amount. You don't have streaming back then. So maybe he found a way to sort of mash, get it on the album by putting it within a track so he wouldn't lose space on the record.
Told him he could only do 8 tracks. You're right. He may only have 8 tracks.
And he found a way to put in this too, so.
Right. That would make sense. It is what it is.
Can put out 32 songs on an album back then. So
yeah. I mean, you could, but it'd be like 60 albums. All right, let's go ahead and go to track number 4. It's called Tomorrow Is a Long Time.
Today was not an endless highway. If tonight was not a crooked trail. If tomorrow wasn't such a long time, then lonesome would mean nothing to you at all.
Ah, but only if my own true love is waiting. Yes, and if I could hear a heart a softly pounding, only if she were lying by me would I rest in my bed once again. I can't see my reflection in the mirror.
All right, so Tomorrow is a Long Time. Nice. I think it's a nice folky tune that sets a tone following this previous travesty that we just had to go through. The song really grew on me, and I enjoyed the touches of violin and steel guitar throughout this song. That acoustic strumming, it's beautiful. It's, for lack of a better term, it's just beautiful strumming. I think that knowing, especially now, God, knowing Ron Wood's part of this, it makes me smile a little bit better to hear him play this. I've never heard the Bob Dylan version of this song, but I will say that I like Rod Stewart's vocal styling a little bit more than I do Bob Dylan's, so I think that he really probably owns this song in my ears. This one grew on me over the past couple of weeks, and I'll say that although it's not nowhere near as good as the next song, I think it's a great song. I gave this one a 7. Chris, what do you think about Tomorrow's a Long Time?
Yeah, it makes sense that Bob Dylan wrote this song, because it feels very much like a Bob Dylan song when I hear
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
I didn't know that when I wrote these notes out, but it totally makes sense. To me, it's got that 70s kumbaya, I'll sit around a campfire type feel to it. It's very melodic, right. Nice, you know, acoustic guitar work, similar to what you said. I like the violin touches in there. It's kind of middle of the road for me. I don't love it. I don't hate it. Those songs, I appreciate them, but they don't really move the needle a lot for me, those kind of songs. I gave it a 6. I think it's very good.
Okay. Anthony, what'd you think about Tomorrow is a Long Time?
Songfacts.com, an anonymously written medieval poem titled Western Wind inspired this song. So it's Westronwynde. That's the name of the one inspired this song. So must be Irish or something, it sounds like. And then this is what tripped me up. The most well-known cover of the song is by Elvis Presley, who recorded it for his album How Great Thou Art on May 26, 1966, but ended up instead including it on Spin Out, published in 66 as well. It wasn't Dylan's version that caught Presley's attention, though. It instead was Odetta's cover on her 1965 album Odetta Sings Dylan. And Presley was a hero to Dylan, and Dylan considered Presley's version of the song to be his favorite of all the covers of his songs. So that's pretty cool. I've never heard Dylan's version of this one.
I haven't either.
What tripped me up the most is I first heard a song by Nickel Creek. So I was listening to this album going, how the hell is Rod Stewart singing a Nickel Creek song?
Nope.
And then I was like, wait a minute, no, the math's not right in my head. And I did some research, and I was like, oh, no, wait, this is a Bob Dylan song, Nickel Creek cover. Okay, Nickel Creek's version is really beautiful, too. I think Sarah, the girl in the band, she sings on that one. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's a beautiful
version.
Is she
still in the band? Or
I think they're back together now.
Is she? Good.
Yeah, I just saw them a week ago, y'all.
That's why I knew you'd seen them. I just didn't know she was back in the band with them.
I think, didn't you, Chris? So.
Yes.
Were they good?
She's kind of the main. To me, seemed there were two. There was a guy and a girl. But they both kind of shared lead singing duties, if you will, from what I could tell.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see.
Yeah, they were fantastic, man.
Yeah, they're a great band. You know what I mean, man. I really do like this song. I gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent tune too. Like I said, I discovered this album recently and fell in love with it. So that's probably why a lot of my ratings are really high, because I've been listening to it a while before I brought it on the podcast. So it's just an excellent tune. I love the cover version. I need to hear Dylan's version. I mean, Dylan and Presley's version now, to see what they sound like. But yeah, it's an 8 for me. Another excellent tune. So
that's cool, man. All right. Well, let's go ahead, flip this album over, go to side 2. Track. Well, the first track is the 30-second interlude, right? So we're not really going to review that one. It's called Henry.
It's got
so we're
going
to go up to... It does. It says his song name is Henry.
I guess I should start looking at
it. It didn't in Spotify.
So we're going to go
Apple
to track.
Music either.
We ready, guys?
Sorry, Jim.
We're going to go to track six, Maggie May.
Sorry, I'm all over the place this morning.
I'm going to go ahead and read my original notes for this song, and then I'm going to tell you what changed. All right, so Maggie May, obviously a huge song for Rod, and this intro is absolutely magical on the acoustic guitar. The song kind of deceives the listener initially, thinking you're going to hear another acoustic rocker, but our acoustic song, and this turns into a pretty much rocking, mid-paced rocking song. And my notes say, I'm not sure how iconic this song was or is, but my familiarity with the song, I know it. I've known it for years. And it made me want to say, there's no way this song's not considered outstanding, because it is outstanding. However, finding out this is the number one streamed album or song, and this is also, he still plays it to this day live, or at least when he tours. That leads me to believe this song is a little bit greater than outstanding, and it has swayed me to give this song perfection. This is probably Rod Stewart perfection and perfection for the genre. So I'm going to go ahead and I bumped mine to a 10 late yesterday, so to speak. So I me and Chris talked about this yesterday briefly, and whenever I found out a little bit more about the information about the song, I'm not denying its greatness by no means, but he's right. It is a 10, and I'm with it. It's a 10. Chris, Maggie May.
And not only is it does he play it every show, it's his most played song in concert.
Right.
So, plus his most streamed song. And to me, it's the first thing song I think of when I think of Rod Stewart. So, I mean,
honestly,
there was no doubt in my mind it was a 10. I will say, it's funny on my notes here, I said, a bit of an unnecessary acoustic intro. Not sure why the first 30 seconds exist.
Wow. And I love it.
Which just doesn't fit the song. Yet again, they're just mashing stuff together. I mean, what I actually captured, which I just cut out the first 30 seconds, that's the way to start a song. And that's the way this song should have been started. I'm glad to hear that was actually its own separate thing, because it should have been. But I'm not going to bash that anymore, because this song itself, I hate parts. I'm not going to lie. I do.
But the 70s, I love parts. Man. They did that
it's
all
very,
the time in the 70s.
This is a very polarizing album for me. But yeah, I mean, the chorus is absolutely infectious. Okay, hater away. The only mark, and I'm giving this a 10, no doubt, but there is something, I don't know if when you guys listen to this song, there's like a xylophone or something in the background that's extremely like grating on your ears every so often. It just bring, it. Goes, did y'all not hear that at
no,
all when listening to
it.
This?
I did. Jimmy? I could hear it. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like really loud. Headphones. Almost hurts your ears, man. Like, I don't know. Take that out of there.
It's a harp,
drop
isn't
that 30
it?
Seconds. Is it a harp? I don't know what it is.
I think so. But I know what you're talking about.
It's so loud it hurts your ears.
I didn't hear it.
Man, that sounds like something else I know what it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a 10, but it would have been an 11 if you took those two things off.
It would have been an 11. I love it. All right, Anthony, talk to us, Maggie May.
Yeah, autobiography, songs, facts. God, I can't get my words right this morning.
English is the preferred language of our
is it
podcast today. Feel free.
Je suis en, what, how do you say it in French? Je suis en, I can't remember now. But anyways.
Solamente en inglés, por favor.
Okay, gotcha. Songfacts.com. Tough couple of days. It's hard being
like
an old parent.
It's like
man.
Herding cats this morning with you two. Let's just
come
let's
on,
go,
Grandpa.
Please.
Tired, man. I tell you, it's hard being an old parent.
You're tired. I stayed up till 2:30 watching Colorado last night.
I had a kid's birthday party I put on yesterday. I went to a back to school bash on Friday with the kids. I am whooped this morning.
Right, let's get back on track.
Songfacts.com. Bring in it. His memoir, Rod, the autobiography, Stewart provided details of the experience that led to this song. Wrote Stewart at 16, I went to the Baloo Jazz Festival in the New Forest. I'd snuck in with some mates via an overflow sewage pipe, and there on a secluded patch of grass, I lost my not remotely prized virginity with an older and larger woman who'd come on to me very strongly in the beer tent. How much older? I can't tell you. This is even funnier. How much older? I can't tell you, but old enough to be highly disappointed by the brevity of the experience. So he lost his virginity very quickly, it sounds. It was one of those kind of moments.
Large woman in a beer tent. That's something right there. Yeah.
And kids, that's how you define beer goggles. Go ahead.
Exactly. This was the first thing.
That's how I met your mother.
That's how you came on this earth. God.
That's hard. That's hardcore.
This was the first big hit of the rock era to feature a mandolin, which was mostly heard in folk music. Stewart first used the instrument on Mandolin Wind, which I love, Chris hates, which was one of the first songs he recorded for the album. He liked the result, so he used it on Maggie as well. Maggie May remains the biggest mandolin-based hit ever recorded, although the theme music for The Godfather, released the following year, may be more recognized. So, I didn't think about that. Me personally, man, Maggie May, this one is huge, not only for Rod Stewart, I think for classic rock. I mean, throw a stick on classic rock radio and you'll hit this song. I mean, it's played all the freaking time. It's got everything you need. Great hooks, great chords, great sound, great vocals. I mean, you just name it. It's an amazing song. I never get tired of it. It's a 10. It's easily perfection. So
rock and roll, my friend, rock and roll. All right, let's move it up. Track number, what is it, 7? Mandolin Wind. It's the sleeper of the night, right, Chris?
Poor Chris.
So Mandolin Wind got that acoustic introduction yet again. Damn, you're gonna let this go on?
Kill it.
No, I'm just playing.
That's what the song does forever. What are you talking about?
God. All right. No, honestly,
you think it's over? Keeps on going.
It just keeps going. Just never wants to quit. No, what I'm saying is, I think it's a beautiful acoustic introduction. And this is what's weird. The song almost sounds out of tune to my ears, which is sounds weird to me, but it almost sounds like it's a little flat. Throughout the recording concept that he has going on here, I didn't know what he's working with, but his voice really works with this tonality of the guitar, the mandolin. I think the song can really, it can kind of get your head bobbing. And it feels like a hybrid of bluegrass. I don't know what this to say. I know, Chris, you really don't like it. I think the song works. I think it's a great tune. I gave this one a 7. I think it's a solid song. And although I'm not a huge, huge fan of the vocal, you could have made this one no vocals, and I would have absolutely loved it a lot more. It would have been a higher score. But still, with Rod's raspiness, it's still a 7. I think it's great. Chris, I know. Here we go. What do you think about Mandolin Wind?
Well, I'm already flushed, so it's not my flush. Just saying.
Yeah, but I'm expecting something rough.
No, I mean, I was looking at it. I only took 2 notes for this song. I was just like so ready to just move on to the next one. Here, and then I wrote one in while I was listening to it. not bad in parts, but it feels like it goes on forever. I think we can all agree on that, right? I mean, it feels like it goes on way too long.
Not for me.
I do appreciate, and kind of like what you said, I appreciate the instrumental parts. I feel like instrumentally it's very good, and I get that bluegrass comparison. That's a good call on that. Again, another kind of 70s kumbaya filler type song. I give it a 5.
That's still good. Okay, fair enough. Anthony, Man of the Wind, talk to us.
Songfacts.com.
And Rod, I'm curious to hear why you actually love this song so much, to be honest. I can't wait. Go ahead. Sorry.
You done?
Finished. Are you finished?
Are you finished? Yep. You ready to go? You sure? All right. Oh, God. Rod Stewart composed this ballad, sung from the point of view of an aging farmer who has survived the worst winter in 14 years. The farmer pays tribute to his loyal wife, who stayed by his side throughout the winter, and all the others. It said Stewart was doing more songwriting by this time. His earlier songs were mostly blues covers. Mandolin Wind is the only track on his third album that he wrote by himself. He also penned the title track with Ronnie Wood and Maggie May with Martin Quintenton, something, can't pronounce his last name. The song fades out, Mandolin Wind, at the 3:28 mark, but then comes back because the farmer has more to say. He gets even more emotional, letting his wife know he felt guilty when he didn't have enough to eat that winter, exulting in his love for her. So when the song picks back up, that's when he's starting to feel remorseful and everything, and his angst and everything is coming through. So I thought it was kind of a neat little trick to do. I know Iron Maiden's done that a few times with a few of their songs where they, you know, like Empire of the Clouds, you know that one?
Oh, yeah.
You know, how it kind of builds to the big bombastic explosion at the end. Yeah. So, you know, man, I love the chill vibe of this song. I love a mandolin. I love the way Rod Stewart sounds. I covered this in one of my Song Lines and Tan Lines episodes, the mandolin episode. I picked out some mandolin songs that I really loved. And I think, honestly, I just love the vibe of this one. I think it's really why I get into it so much. I love the vibe of it. I love the sound of it. I love the mandolin itself. Rod sounds perfect on it. I just fell in love with the song the first time I heard it. It was the first one that got me really into more of his music was this song. So I don't know. It just really jumped off at me. I don't know why. So I gave it a 9. I think it's an outstanding tune. I just really dig it from start to finish. So,
okay. Fair enough, man. Fair enough.
I'm a lot of twists and turns in that one, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in it, but I mean,
maybe
it's
a few too many twists and turns, you know.
See, I'm trying to have a discussion here. See, this is a podcast, Chris. We have discussions on podcasts. That's what we do.
That's what I'm saying. Do you maybe think there's a few too many twists and turns?
We're trying to discuss that.
Do you like to read books? Right. You know, they have a lot of twists and turns too.
I'm more of a movie
guy. Can't read.
They have they have twists and turns in movies too. Especially Barbarian. Really? Have y'all seen Barbarian?
Woo! I'm not seen goodness. Nope.
Check that one out.
I don't have HBO Next. Max right now. I will eventually. All right, let's go to track number 8. It's called I Know I'm Losing You. Chris, hit that one.
Losing the podcast too today.
This song right here, I Know I'm Losing You, finally, this is my notes, finally we have an electric tune, funky guitar tone, nice bass line that follows the guitar. The song really does have this funk vibe going for it. The piano is actually a nice addition. There is no hint of musical control throughout the song. It seems like it's in the vein of freeform jazz. reminds me of late 60s, early 70s Miles Davis, which I'm a huge fan of that era of Miles Davis. That's the Bitches Brew years, and I love that era of Miles Davis's music. I do like this one a lot. I think this, I would call this one a sleeper, except it was a single. And what's weird is releasing this song as a single in the 70s, you bought this album because of this single, you're going to be disappointed because nothing else on the record sounds like this. So that's something that really didn't make sense to me at all. But nonetheless, I'm going to call it a sleeper because it ain't like anything else on this album. It's definitely my favorite song on the record. I think it's a great tune that captivates and entertains from beginning to end. The drum solo. This has got a freaking drum solo in it, guys. I mean, I'm not sure if you can make it that far, but it's got a drum solo in it. I think the song is excellent. I was borderline going higher, but with it being excellent, I'm good with that at an 8. It's going to be my second highest rating beyond Maggie May. I love this song. That's just how it is. Chris, I know I'm losing you.
Yeah, you know, it's my sleeper as well, although I didn't really realize this was a single. Because I've never heard it on the radio before.
Hell, I neither.
But I will say, this is what Rod, to me, when he's at his best, is this kind of music right here. This kind of bluesy, dirty, kind of just jamming kind of stuff. And his vocals are perfect for it, I think. This song feels a whole lot like a Stevie Wonder song that I was made to love her. When I was listening to this, I was like, I was born in Little Rock, had a childhood. I was like singing those lyrics to this song. I mean, it just had that feel to it, you know. But it's a rocker. Honestly, I think I'd close the album with this one instead. I mean, I know the other one's, you know, up there, but like, this feels like a great way to close an album. But I'm with you. I gave it an 8 as well.
Fantastic. Anthony, I know I'm losing you.
It's funny y'all say that. This would have been my flush this week. I don't understand the love for this.
You must not like dirty rocking songs.
Oh, I was like, wow. But I was going to defend it. I was like, it kind of makes sense because it's not like any other song on the album, Anthony. I wasn't going to heckle you
guys. I was hoping to get a bigger reaction out of that than you guys got. But I was like, well, damn, they didn't give me the reaction I wanted when I said that. So I guess I'm not losing you.
What is your flush, Anthony, this week?
I don't have a flush.
Sure, there's no flush.
I think the last, my lowest one is the next one. I gave it a 7.
Oh, okay.
That's the only one. But I agree, I would flip the two songs. I think you closed with this one.
I agree.
I like the groove that leads this one in. The guitar and bass exchanging licks is really good stuff. Mm-hmm. Tossing a piano, Rod Stewart over that. I mean, it's just so good.
No, it's fantastic.
I always like to toss a little Rod occasionally, so. I like that breakdown in the middle as well with the humming and that piano. Digging that too.
Juvenile.
Love how bombastic it closes out as well. So it's an 8, man. It's an excellent for me too.
There we go. So we're all on the same page on that one.
I almost want to bump this to a 9, honestly, because I told you, man. I think it's one of my favorite songs on this album.
It's a killer tune, man.
It definitely is my favorite song on this album, and I get it, and I'm glad, you know, Anthony.
You know what? I'm going to bump this to a 9 because I feel like it probably deserves it.
An outstanding. Yeah, it's a great song, man. It really is.
It's an eclectic album. I will give you that. That is does have a lot of hills and valleys in it, so as a listener, you're not really sure what you're getting from song to song, and that's probably because he was still in Faces at the time and he was trying to figure his own. This album really, I think, helped make him the solo artist, because they said after this album it started to be Rod Stewart and the Faces. That's what I read somewhere, something like that. So I think he was just figuring his groove out, who he wanted to be as a solo artist, and that's probably why the songs are the way they are.
I'm just going to be 100% honest with you. I've never heard of Faces. I didn't know he was in a band before this.
Well, I hadn't heard of them either, but until I read through some of the Wikipedia stuff, I had no idea. And then, of course, I didn't really pay attention to the Ron Wood thing. Well, I was like,
was Ron Wood in Faces too?
He was. Yeah.
Okay.
That's crazy, dude. And from what I read, Ron Wood didn't even join the Stones until 75, so he wasn't even one of the original members of the Stones.
I guess that makes
sense. So it looks like after the Faces era ended and Rod Stewart went pure solo, it looks like that's when Rob Wood jumped ship and became part of the Stones. So, hey, that's fair enough, man.
Things you learn, right?
Well, you learn this stuff, dude. This is truly unfamiliar territory for me, because I'm not, you know, this is not my normal go to when it comes to music.
Why I like diving into these older albums, because I was a year from being born when this album came out. So it's kind of fun to go back and see the rock and roll history that's involved in a lot of these albums we missed out on, you know. So
No, I couldn't agree with you more, man. It really does. It kind of gives you an eye-opening experience when you hear stuff and you're like, wow, this is where something comes from. And, you know, Rod Stewart's a legendary artist. Like I said at the beginning, he's a legendary artist, dude. He still performs to this day. We're talking 50 plus years of performing.
But dude, you know, you hear his name sometimes. People kind of snicker when you hear Rod. Like, I mentioned Rod Stewart a few days ago to my wife, and she was like, Rod Stewart. You know, that's what a lot of people do when you hear his name. And it's a shame because you go back to these old albums he did, and you're like, this dude had something, man. He's not the Rod Stewart you think he is, you know. So
yeah, he's probably had herpes and crabs. And, no, I'm just kidding. All right, let's get this thing closed out with a final track. It's called Reason to Believe. Hit it, Chris.
I'll find a way to believe that it's all true. Knowing that you lied, straight-faced, while I cried, still I look to find a reason to believe. Someone like you makes it hard to live without somebody else. Someone like you makes it easy to give. Never think about myself. If I gave you time to change my mind, I'd find a way just to leave the past behind. Knowing that you lied, straight-faced, while I cried, still I look to find a reason to believe.
So, Reason to Believe. So, when you first suggested this album, I looked at the track list and I was like, man, I ain't heard any of these songs except for Maggie May. Not at all. And then I heard this, then I listened to this song. I was like, holy crap, I know this song. And I realized I'm familiar with this tune. And as soon as I heard it, memory started coming back of listening to this when I was a child, you know, somewhere along the way, whether it be radio play or something, I remember hearing this song and knew some of the lyrics. I mean, like, really kind of like, wow, I was shocked. And this really is a super good song. I like the violin solo, which is something weird to say, but it fits this song. And I think this one is a fantastic closing track. And based on the track listing of this particular album, I don't know if there's a better song to close. I know it's contrary to what y'all just said. I don't think there's a better track to close out the album with, man. This is easily my second favorite song on the album, and that's saying a lot. Behind I Know I'm Losing You, I think this is the next best song. I don't know, man. I think this is excellent way to close out, and this really makes the listener, in my opinion, think, man, I wonder what he's coming up with next. And that's kind of how I like an album to close out. Normally I like the rockers. This is a mid-pacer, I think. You know, it's a little bit slow, a little bit mid, but I gave this one an 8. A solid way to close a record. Chris, Reason to Believe.
You know, similar. I also heard this and was like, yeah, I know this song. And it was like when I saw it, because I remember this being on the radio, like when it came out. And I'm like, okay, I wasn't around in 71, so that doesn't make any sense. And I see he re-released this in 93 for some reason. And for whatever reason, when I listened to it, it didn't sound exactly the same as I remember it listening, you know, when it was playing on the radio. So I don't know. Anthony, maybe you got some news there. I'll let you tackle that. Yeah, well, it looks like he re-released it on like an unplugged album or something. Yeah. And that's maybe what's going on with that. But yeah, when I heard that, I was like, yeah, I know this song too. And it doesn't really make sense why, because it doesn't sound exactly like I remember it sounding. So I was like, yeah, there's a re-release in there somewhere. It is a solid closer. I mean, I did prefer I'm Losing You a little more. But that said, I still gave the song an 8. And, you know, it's nice mid-tempo rocker, and it's a pretty decent way to close this album. And I kind of like the way it starts slow but kind of builds pace the whole way through. Yeah, it's an excellent way to close the album. It's an 8.
Fantastic. Anthony, Reason to Believe.
Solid tune, man. If you like the rest of the songs on this album, I really don't know why you wouldn't like this one. I mean, it's got a Maggie May vibe to it. I'm going to bump mine to an 8, too, and keep it all at 8 and have an excellent. It is an excellent tune.
Anthony, I hate to interrupt you. Did you notice that this song and Maggie May, I guess the single was released and this was the flip side, and it's considered both Maggie May and Reason to Believe the first single from the album. Isn't that weird?
Didn't know that.
Well, I was looking at it. Now, this is Wikipedia, of course, so it, who knows if it's true. But that's what it says. It says the first single from Every Picture Tells a Story was Reason to Believe / Maggie May.
Yeah.
So that's crazy, man. Two of the best songs on the album on one flip side there.
Chris was talking about that acoustic album in the 90s. I think it was a pretty big album for Rod Stewart in the early 90s, that acoustic album. So that's probably where we all heard this song. It sounds familiar to me, right, too. Dude.
Yeah. So, yeah,
Jimmy walked away when I was talking about that. But yeah, that to me is why I know this song. Yeah,
so maybe that's why I know it too. Heck,
I had anything else at an 8 or 9 or 10, so I'm gonna keep it this one at an 8 and keep it consistency, man. 8, excellent. Yeah, like I said, I really, one day I dusted off this album and I was like, I just want to listen to some Rod Stewart. I've never listened to him much, and really just fell in love with this album. And I'm glad you guys seemed like you mostly enjoyed it, except for Chris. He's got some asinine comments.
Listen, but, you don't have to glowingly ejaculate over everything always, man. I can pick out what I like about it and criticize what I don't, man.
Exactly. Chris is in a salty mood this morning.
Well, he's only had 3 hours.
It's like
sleep.
You're like a little gnat, just like picking at me the whole time, man.
I like to pick on you, Chris, because you get so worked up so easily, man.
Wow.
If you didn't get worked up, I wouldn't pick on you.
It's escalating, kids. Oh, my God. All right, let's get the final assessments of this record. My final thoughts, here we go. First of all, I'm going to say great pick, Anthony. It's not because it's something I normally listen to, by no means. It's because you gave me some homework to do. It made me go back and listen to an album, and I had to really dedicate time. Unfortunately, it's a shorter album, so I was able to do this. And me having to pick my daughter up from school three nights a week from practice, I actually got to listen to this album in entirety basically every night that I went. And for 2 weeks, I got to listen to it almost daily. And it really allowed me to absorb some of the stuff. The stuff I don't like, I just don't like. But the stuff I do like really shines. Although I will say this, I'm not a huge fan of Rod Stewart by no means, but my wife, she absolutely loves him. She loves his voice. She loves his late 70s, early 80s stuff, which is probably frowned upon by a lot of folks, but she does love that styling of Rod, and she's a huge, to this day, a huge fan. For the past 20 odd years, I've been listening to Rod Stewart while, her playlists are playing just, randomly. Although these songs are very unfamiliar, some seem to have a familiar taste to me. Listening to it multiple times really allowed me to appreciate some of the stuff and still criticize some of the stuff. I will say sometimes listening to it is a little bit of a struggle, but that's okay. That's what makes the music, either it'll grow on you or it just never will. And that's just how it is with certain things. I say that Rod is an acquired taste to my listening. It's basically mood music. I think it is mood music. I will say that will I revisit this album? Probably not. A couple songs did get stars, and I will say they're probably going to pop up throughout my listening on Apple. Sometimes music grabs you and sometimes it don't. And this is why I call this mood music. I said I need to be in the mood to seek this out. Overall, my rating came out to be a 7.2. Man, I'm good with that. I think it is a great listen for what it is. Would I seek it out again? I'm not going to seek the whole album out, but I will allow the 3 or 4 songs that I starred to come back into my playlist. Chris, what's your final thoughts?
So you would say Rod is an acquired taste, is what you're saying?
Exactly. Right.
I'm sorry.
Is that too easy?
We're only juvenile.
Hey, kids, welcome to 5th grade.
Yeah, I can tell I've had I'm operating on 4 hours sleep right now, so. You know what? It was an interesting album, and I'm glad Anthony picked it. It definitely, it's not something I would listen to too often, but I do have respect for Rod Stewart. I've gone and seen people cover his music in concerts. I remember last time I saw Anderson East, he closed with a Rod Stewart song. So, this guy, he's very well respected, and he's got a great voice. I mean, there's no denying that. As far as this album goes, I think some of the songs were a little long, kind of drug on a little too long. There's a lot of outros and the intros, and I don't know. I guess that's just the way music was created in the early 70s, so that I guess that kind of makes sense. But there are two huge songs on this album that we all knew, and several really good songs, within a few that I didn't like. I mean, that's kind of the way it is. I don't know if I'd glowingly recommend this album to all of our listeners, but it's worth, I guess, one spin anyway, just to see if you like it or not. My score overall was a 7.3, and which seems high for me, honestly, because I was somewhat critical. But there, you know, you've got Maggie May, you've got Reason to Believe, and I think I had 2 9s on that after that. So like,
I know, yeah. I'm losing you. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I really enjoyed the Elvis cover too. There, I thought he did a pretty good job with that, and I think the first song was pretty good too, even though it was a little racist. So that.
It's okay, man.
Anthony, you can't say it was. I mean,
no. I'm
look
not
at the lyrics.
No, I'm not saying it. No, God, I'm not saying it's not that at all. I'm just saying,
and I'm
just
not upset about it. I think it's kind of comical, but I'm sure some younger generation would be upset about it. So.
Well, I mean, it's something we're trying
this
to
day and time.
Something we're trying to change a little bit now. It was different back then, and you know, in unfortunate ways, it was different in some ways. With that, but we're changing it now. But you can go back and look at the past and say, well, it was the past. Let's make it better now, but you know, let the past be the past. It's fine. We'll work for a better future and just leave the past alone, so to speak, you know. So
yeah. Anyways. Yeah. All right, Anthony, what are your final thoughts?
What was your final rating, Jimmy? I didn't hear it.
Mine was 7.2, which okay. I think was a good rating for me for an album that I was super unfamiliar with and an artist I'm not a huge, huge fan of. So yeah. I think it just tells you how good the album is in my ears.
That's good. Yeah, you know, I'm glad we dove into it. And I hope that more people listening to us might venture out and listen to a little more of his music. You know, I took a deeper dive into his stuff, and he's got some really, really good albums, really good songs. And I would highly recommend this to anybody listens to us, because it's got just a nice flow, nice feel, especially like classic rockish kind of sounds, even folkish kind of sounds. It's got a lot of good stuff in there like that. And, you know, I gave it an 8.4. That's what my final rating came to be, which puts it just past excellent, which doesn't surprise me. I really, when I found this album, I really enjoyed listening to it and continue to enjoy listening to it. So it's kind of put me on a path where I've listened to more of his albums. So it doesn't surprise me. Mine was kind of high. So 8.4, which puts you past excellent. And I think it's well-deserved. So
fantastic. Like I said, you know, it's one that made me do some homework, and you know, that's good to do on certain reviews. So it gives you a chance to appreciate something you normally wouldn't, because I normally wouldn't pick it. You know what I mean? So it's great.
I like to venture. I want to start venturing out more into 70s stuff. Somebody was mentioning somebody recently, and I was like, I've never heard their music before. You know, and like, I really want to like Deep Purple. A couple of their albums are really, really strong and solid, and you know, Uriah Heep, not so much, but
yeah, I agree with you, man. Like, I think the more we've done this podcast, the more I realize that I really like 70s music more than maybe 80s music. That's just kind of
there's
in my
some
wheelhouse.
Really good albums we missed out on in the 70s, you know.
I agree. Oh, yeah, it's funny because, like, I think a lot of people who are 10 years younger than us are like, kind of have this like yearning to have grown up in the 80s so they could listen to the kind of stuff we listen to. And then I see us saying, well, yeah, man, I've been cool to listen, grow up in the 70s and listen to that kind of music. So
the problem is, we were 10 years older, we'd be closer to 60 now instead of 50. So
well, that's true. Yeah.
There is some negatives on that one, too. So,
yeah, no kidding. Jeez, man. All right, boys. Well, it's time for a pick. Here we go.
And in this corner, weighing in at approximately 200 pounds, is the master of metal, the guru of guitar, and a lover of all things harmonica. He's our fearless leader. It's Jimmy with his pick of the week.
All right, guys. So I've been thinking about what I want to review, and I came across a couple albums I really want to touch on, and I'm torn. One album is absolutely from an iconic country artist that you started way back in the late 50s or early 60s for sure, but and he performs still to this day, sort of. The other artist, yeah, he still plays, man. He just, you know, he's not as spry as he once was, and not as big a hellraiser. But and the other artist is a, I would dare say, an iconic hard rock progressive act from the 90s. I wasn't for sure which way to go. I think we're leaning, we're going to lean toward the country artist this time, only because I'm in the mood for country. I really am. We got this Country Thunder coming up. I've been listening to a lot of country music over the past couple of months now. And we're visiting probably one of the most iconic artists of all country. We're going to go with Hank Williams Jr., Wild Streak from 1988. This is I think it's 88, maybe it's 87. Hell, I can't even remember now, but it's a great album. I think it is. It's going to be, this was the heartbeat of the 80s. He was huge. This is when he was huge. I mean, this is just
Country
barely
Boy
before.
Can't Survive on It by Chance. Or?
No, it's not on that album. It's got a bunch of good songs on it, but it's got a cover. It's got a Skinner cover on it, which is how he closes the album out. Guys, give it a listen. It is definitely, this is 80s country, so it ain't going to have all that, you know, it's not going to be 70s twang. It's going to be 80s production in a whole nine yards. So be prepared. I remember rocking this album out a lot back in my high school days, so this will be a fun one to listen to.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm on board.
All right, boys. Well, Anthony, what do you got going on this week? I know you had a pretty big episode. I know you're going through some changes on your podcast, right?
Songlines.
You had some interviews this past week, man. That's great.
Yeah. Well, so I had a couple more.
In a somber way, but it was still good, man.
Yeah, I had a couple more I was trying to line up, but I think they've fallen through. But Songlines of Talons. I'm going to try and get back to the box set, Boats, Speeches, Bars, and Ballads. Get back to Beaches this week is my goal. And then we'll see. You know, with the passing of Buffett, you know, it's kind of thrown me in a tailspin over there a little bit. I mean, I'm sure it's thrown his whole family in a tailspin. But, you know, me personally, you know, for the podcast, I've tried to do a few tributes. I did a couple tributes with a couple people I've known in the past. We did a tribute. I found some articles on dealing with celebrity grief that I thought were really interesting. So I did a little quick episode on that. And it made me not feel as silly as I felt that week, because apparently it's a thing. There is a tried and true psychological thing that deals with celebrities' grief. And it's a true thing. It does happen. So if anybody wants to listen to that, you can. But like I said, this week I'm hoping to get back to Beaches and start progressing forward on the podcast. And this podcast, I got some bonus episodes I want to work on, some albums I want to do. I'm hoping to do that for next Sunday. So we'll see how all that goes.
Awesome, man. Hopefully you can make something happen. That'll be great. That'll be fantastic. Yeah. I look forward to hearing them, because I know it's a couple of I kind of know some of your planning, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on some of those artists. So that'd be great.
The week is already stacking against me. I got something at school for my kid on Monday. I've got an eye appointment Tuesday. So there is my recording time. I got to get to the store one of those days. And so like I said, we'll see what happens next week.
Oh yeah. All right, guys, we'll wrap this thing up. Yeah. For the Audible Ecstasy podcast, this is Jimmy.
This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this is it. Time of day, but the